life on the road. It's
booze, tacos, angry dwarves, strippers waving guns,
and
fees, fights, canceled flights, running with the runs,
and
blacklists, bounce checks, great, a bachelorette, drunks in the front, making out through your set,
and
middle acts doing blow, more missing merch,
and
drive the rental car past another mega church,
and
juice, keys, vagina, fist, your cell phone is gone, one big Law and Order marathon.
Dennis?
Do you know what we're doing saving today?
It. Dennis is saving
it. I know I'm on this podcast.
All right, that's good. That's a first step.
I mean, is it just limited to road stories?
No,
not
at all.
We talk about stand-up or talk about
everything,
life, right?
Anything you want to talk about.
Are we on now?
You know my only two rules.
Yeah, I do. But I don't know if Hugh does.
No politics and no shitting on other comics.
No shitting on other comics.
Unless they're in the room.
Fair enough.
Okay. Thanks for tuning the Road Stories podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Murray Valeriano. We're part of the All Things Comedy Network. Aaron, what's going on at All Things Comedy today?
We've got some great new YouTube videos. Check those out. YouTube.com/ATC. We got a new poker video with Bill Burr, Natasha Leggero, Brendan Walsh, Nick Thune, and Brooks Whelan.
Does anybody know how to play poker in that game?
I sure hope so.
You haven't seen it yet?
I haven't watched it yet.
Okay, it was pissing off Jay Larson, because Jay Larson's the only other person on this network who knows how to play poker.
Yeah.
And
it's frustrating.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of poker,
all right,
let me tell you how I know these two comics on my show today. I met Dennis Regan. Did I meet you in Vegas first? Did I meet you in Chicago? I don't expect you to remember this.
Why are you asking me? Because, well, let me jog your memory.
Yeah.
I have no idea who you are.
Okay. We met in Vegas. You threw a party. Maybe you were at Brad Garrett's.
Yeah, okay. Did you come to that party? A little gathering?
It was me and Bobby Collins came.
Okay, wonderful. I think I'd met you before that, though.
Okay. I met you in Chicago a few years ago, but I can't tell which was... Because you and Brian were doing like Thursday, Friday, and then I was doing Saturday, Sunday at the Improv.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
So I think that maybe like that was
eight or 10 years ago.
That might have been where I met you first.
Yeah.
All right.
That was a fun little thing we had in Vegas there.
That was great. I enjoyed it. That's what I like about Vegas is there's so many comics coming that you run into people you haven't seen in years.
That's one of the things that's cool about Vegas, because the road basically is quite lonely out there. You don't even see your buddies. Once you start headlining... And all your buddies are headlining, you're out there, you know, you're kind of on your own. Vegas is cool like that. So whenever I'm there, not all the time, but I like to find a bar or something and say, look, everybody show up here at midnight on Saturday night. And
yeah.
That's what I did then.
And then I love to tell my wife, I'm like, oh, I'm going to a party after the show. She's like, well, what time does it start? Like 1:30. What? She still hasn't. We've been married for 15 years. She still doesn't understand the comics time frame.
Sort of Rat Pack style party.
Yeah, totally. Like, I'll get home after, like, Irvine or something, and it's 8 o'clock. He's like, you going to sleep all day? I got home at 3, man.
Well, it's one of the things, too, about being comedians. The whole life is kind of a party in a way every time you go out, at the clubs. But we really don't have many parties. There's no point in throwing parties because it's kind of a party every night
when you go out
to the clubs.
And it's very social too.
Very social. So, like, when are you going to throw a party? Saturday night, no one's coming.
If you have it
on Saturday night, and then Wednesday night, no one's coming to that either. So you don't really throw parties.
I met my second guest, Hugh Fink. You would think maybe I met you on this show 8 years ago, probably. How long ago do you think you did this show?
I think it was around 8 years ago
With Al Lubell,
and I recall meeting you, Murray, working on a pilot with you.
There you go. Yes, absolutely.
It was a scientist, but it was a comedy show hosted by a scientist.
His name was Tim Lee, and I've become really good friends with him, believe it or not.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten his name.
Yeah.
Is he still a scientist?
Yeah, well, he's a scientist turned comedian.
Turned comedian.
But once a scientist, always a scientist.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I felt so dumb on that show because, I would write something about the chaos theory, and then... I'd give it to him. He's like, actually, you're talking about entropy or something. Like, well, I don't know the difference.
You would have been amazing, Dennis, being the scientific-minded person you are.
Right.
They would have been happy.
Do you detect sarcasm?
Not at all.
But that, and Hugh does a lot of writing in television, and I don't know if you were, it was one of the most frustrating pilots I'd ever written because I remember the production company, the head of production company, and I decided he was the funniest out of everybody, and his like whole thing was, I want to Skype into the writers' meetings because I worked in sitcoms for many years. And then it turned out he was a writer's assistant on like Saved by the Bell or something, so or Hello Larry or something.
You're in trouble.
Oh,
you know you're in trouble.
And I remember he Skyped, and then like, you know, once the boss Skypes in, it like kills any creativity.
That's correct. You mean he Skyped in like Charlie on Charlie's Angels? Like that.
I think he was writer's assistant on Charlie's Angels. Like, that's how long ago.
Which is a very funny show.
It was. Uh-huh. And I remember two things about it. One is like his first contribution was talking about shrinkage when you go in the water and your pee-pee shrivels up. And it was like a thing on Seinfeld. And I remember just kind of like, really? You're pitching a Seinfeld bit in saying, and then that got me in a little bit of trouble. And then the network loved the script. I don't know if you remember this, but the network loved the script.
With the pee-pee shrinking?
With the pee-pee shrinking. The pee-pee shrinking didn't make it in. But the production company and that guy didn't like it. He's like, I don't like this. It needs to be funnier. It's like, buddy, our boss loves it. Like, he's like, yeah, but I don't. I want to change it. It's like, no, the guy we work for wants to do this. Well, we're going to change it anyway. And then it ended up not getting picked up. And it was a fun show. It was a really cool kind of Tosh.0, but from a scientific point of view. And then I became really good friends with him when I surfed with him all the time. He's a good guy.
That's cool.
He's doing something now called Taking Heat, where he's doing like a Al Gore thing on climate change. I mean, if you believe that bullshit, right? Come on, right? We're all the same thing. We're just gonna throw
no
that.
Politics, Murray.
Oh, right, no politics. God damn it, my own
your rule.
Ah, and by the way, Tim Lee, shitty comedian. God damn it, that's two right out of the gate. Out of the gate. All right. So, how do you guys know each other?
I'll tell. I'll do all the talking.
And then I'll tell how we've been reunited.
Uh-huh. I don't know how we, you know what, we haven't worked together very much, never at a club that I remember or anything like that, never a road gig or anything. We did a TV show back, it was Comic Strip Live or something.
Or Caroline's or one of those.
Maybe a couple of them, and we hung out a little bit, and then we haven't really crossed paths too many times, and just recently we did, and are working together on something, and when you said to get somebody, I thought I'd get him in here because I get a kick out of Hugh.
Hugh's great.
I very much appreciate it. Dennis is amazing, and it's one of the things where we worked together as stand-ups years ago, and then later in our careers got to work as writers on a show.
Mm-hmm. What show was that?
Cool. We couldn't stand up anymore.
The untitled Brian Regan Netflix series.
Oh, which that's recent, isn't it?
It's very. It hasn't aired yet.
Okay.
But it's his classic stand-up mixed in with original sketches that are inspired by his stand-up.
Oh,
fine. So they're not reenactments.
Right,
they're
right.
Just like if you took his stand-up to the next level but could go and shoot it, you know, elsewhere.
Oh, that's
fun. It's pretty cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
But we're not at liberty to talk about that yet, Hugh.
Other than what I just said.
Other than what you just said.
All right. So which bits? No, that's got it, because I remember somebody telling me about it a couple of months ago, so that's super recent.
Really recent.
Yeah. Awesome.
So recent it hasn't happened.
Is it going to air? Do we know? Is this uncomfortable?
We think so. We put enough work into it that it'll air.
I just got a text. And by work, Dennis means him getting super agitated over where we were ordering lunch from.
Oh, well, look at me.
And there was a type of...
are we having lunch here?
I'm afraid to bring it up.
What were you going to say? What was that?
There was a chicken dish that you ordered. I had gotten you all excited about, and then it didn't arrive because they were out of it.
So that seems a reasonable thing to get upset about.
You were bummed, like, for the entire week.
Oh, that's not true.
He couldn't write.
He's making stuff up.
He couldn't write.
Why are there no, like, all right, apparently we're in this comedy boom again.
No one's told me.
Well, I've read it on a tweet. But that's we don't have any more Caroline's shows or an evening at the Improv or anything like that.
Yeah, I guess it ran.
I think we need something like that now.
Do you?
Yeah, well, I remember back when I was in high school and watching all, you know, these great it was like you could jump from an evening at the Improv to Caroline's to some weird. I remember seeing Jake Johansson on this, like, you know, you remember cable boxes? You had to go all the way to the end. You know, he was like channel 74 all the way at the end on some wannabe Caroline's hour. Like, we don't have any of that. I think we need more of that.
I think we need less.
Oh, really?
Isn't there that Byron Allen?
Hugh, you're a showrunner.
I am. Make it happen.
Do it. Make it
what
happen,
about
Hugh.
Byron Allen has that, right?
We should have good shows.
Oh, sorry.
I'm just kidding.
There's rule number two.
God damn, twice. Aaron, I never do this.
I'm baiting you now, Murray.
I know. Yeah. Now, think about it. That's genius pitching right there.
Right.
We have four comics on. I just set them up for their punchlines. Boom.
You're good.
Yeah. That guy's a genius. He was smart. I don't know if you, I don't want to turn this into the Praise Byron Allen show, but he was smart with his, how he started his empire.
But we'll say Gavin Pallone, who I've worked with, who is a brilliant Hollywood guy, producer, occasional performer, writer, but mostly producer, and he's Conan O'Brien's manager.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So he told me that Byron Allen is one of the most brilliant business people in Hollywood, and I at the time didn't understand. But now I get
you didn't understand what you didn't understand what he meant by that sentence.
But it was just like, I don't speak Flemish. No, I didn't understand. I wasn't aware of the empire that Byron has created.
Yes,
it's a massive. That's what I didn't get. I see.
It's a massive media empire.
And a lot of times, as we've learned, commerce can have nothing or little to do with being funny or talented. Mm-hmm. It can, but it doesn't have to. Mm-hmm. But Byron's a great businessman, according to Gavin Pallone.
Mm.
I did one of his shows. I forget what it was called. I didn't want to do the one where you sit down and it's all fake kind of setups and that kind of thing.
Don't shit on other comics.
Well, no, I didn't yet. I haven't yet.
Yet.
But there's a show where you do straight stand-up, and I said, okay, I'll come out and do that. And I get there, and it was a good setup and everything, except it was they were going to do like six or eight shows in front of the same audience all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the last audience, and I was like, oh, man. And it was a paid audience.
Right, yeah. You're
getting $100 to sit there all day. And it's going to be a drag, but I knew they weren't going to be with me on the small jokes or the subtle jokes or anything like that. So I just went out there, and I said, I'm just going to pretend like I'm killing because I know they're going to sweeten this one up. They're going to have to. I'm just going to pretend like I'm – and I did every tagline for every joke, and I just smiled all the way through it. And I never saw it. But – I get sometimes it's plays, and I get tweeted like that was the best thing, the greatest set I've ever seen, and I was pleased with my performance.
You're a good actor.
Yeah, I can pretend like I'm doing well, but I'm not.
Forget the writing; you got to get in front of the camera.
Yeah, well,
I'll see what I can do.
Is there a camera here?
Yeah, it's just not on. It's right there.
Well, that's one of the things about doing the road or anything now. You go in for a radio in the morning and go, yeah, everything is everything. And it wasn't just like radio. They go, yeah, you got the cameras on. We're going live out to Channel 6 morning show. And this is going to be a video podcast. It's going to go on YouTube forever. I'm like, God, I thought that was just going to a radio show like I used to.
What a showered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're a New York comic, right, Hugh?
I mean, one could say that I became a good comedian when I was living in New York.
Okay.
But I did start here. I was here for 10 years.
Oh, you started here?
I did.
Oh, I didn't know that. Are you from here?
I'm from Indiana.
Where?
But I went to Indianapolis, where you've probably played clubs there.
I know Indianapolis.
Yes.
I'm from a little town called Argus, Indiana.
I think you mentioned that, which I don't know.
I'm not from. I lived there for 6 years, I should say.
Okay.
Sounds like
northern or southern Indiana?
Northern, next to Fort Wayne. Between Plymouth and Fort Wayne.
Got it. Okay. So I went to New York University and then started stand-up there.
Okay.
Then moved out to Los Angeles, where I was here for 11 years
before
I returned to New York for my first major TV writing job.
Mm-hmm.
And then I returned to LA.
All right.
So.
And so did you – and you got good your second time to New York?
I don't remember you getting good in New York.
No, maybe that was an exaggeration. I'd say like to think that my last few years in Los Angeles is when I was starting to become good.
What year are we looking at here?
The early 90s.
Early 90s. So there's still lots of stuff going on, right?
Stand-up wise?
Yeah, because it shortly died right after.
It died right after. But
when I started, right after.
As soon as you got good, comedy died.
Do you feel this way, Dennis? I feel like I missed out on the financial benefits of the comedy boom.
Mm-hmm.
Because by the time I
became... This comedy boom that we're in right now?
No,
the money is rolling in.
No, I mean the legitimate one. In
right,
the
80s. Sure.
Because what happened with that one was, just as I became a strong headliner playing really good clubs, is when the money went down.
Right, right.
And I missed out on when I was opening in... middling for people.
Sure.
Remember that term, middling?
Yeah.
I don't use that anymore.
I prefer it.
I do too.
To feature. Feature was screwed up because the MC would go, "You guys ready for your feature comedian?" And the audiences thought you were the headliner.
That's correct.
And they thought that they would think that maybe Louis Anderson went home and they got a bait and switch. And you're like, no, he's here.
You just reminded me, without bad-mouthing the comic, but it's a great story, is at the Comedy Store, they used to have the show before the show, which was like comedians who Mitzi had approved, but we weren't paid as much. So we were like semi-pros.
Semi-paid regulars?
And the show started at like 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there was a comedian. I was emceeing the show before the show. And a comedian on the 8 o'clock show made a point to say, when you bring me on, make sure to tell the audience this is the real part of the show. I've never forgotten that.
And was it?
Well, technically, but like, isn't that a jack off thing to say to a young comic? Basically, yes. I want you to go out there and tell them that, that you're bad.
Right, right.
And you're talentless, but soon the good people will be coming on.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah. I just don't know why we just don't call everybody the opener, because it's so. No audience knows what a feature comic is, because they rarely say feature.
With the movies, they say feature film. It's the feature film. Right. So people would think when features, but. People get so used to knowing what they know, and they think the audience knows. So I would prefer them just – when you were featuring or middling, for them to say, you ready for your next comedian?
Sure.
And precede that with, your headliner will be up here in a few minutes, but first we have this guy. So there's less pressure on you less when you're pressure. Middling, less money, so you want less pressure. Speaking of the money, she talked about kind of missing out. It kind of reminds me of Sam Snead, who was the greatest golfer.
Okay.
One of the greatest, he's won more tournaments than even Nicklaus or Woods or anybody. But he was a great golfer before the money came to the PGA Tour, right? And then he grew older, and he was about 65 when the senior PGA Tour opened up, and they started paying those guys, and he's like, missed out on the money again.
Because he was too old?
He was too old for that. Aww. He was too old to compete there, so he's like.
But at his nursing home, he was paid a little bit to play, and he got the good money there.
Slamming Sammy Snead.
Have you ever played a nursing home?
I can't say that the show itself took place there. No. Okay. I've had audiences that
absolutely.
Seem like, but no, have you?
No, but I hear just...
In Florida, maybe?
Florida's.
I've never done a nursing home, but I guess it's the step right before that.
A senior
living? We can run with that. Yeah,
and I've done homeless shelters.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Well, yeah, I've done homeless shelters.
Out here or social media?
I remember doing one in New York. I did one in the Bronx. I opened with... Usually, my goal at gigs is to blow the roof off the joint, but I won't do that here.
That's good. Is that a tough crowd, though? Are they paying attention?
Well, I don't know that every homeless crowd is the same, but it was fun. It was fun, yeah.
All right.
There was one guy giving me a hard time. You expect a crazy or two in a homeless shelter. But.
What about the senior living?
Those are great, actually. Yeah. I mean, I'm qualified to live there myself, and they're not staring at their cell phones, and you go once a month, and there's a lot of them around here, out in the Palm Springs area, mm-hmm. and down Orange County. A lot of them, I do a lot, and I love them.
I remember one time now where we met, and I still don't know where it falls into the line. I've met you three times, and you don't remember one of them. That's what I just figured out.
It all sort of blends together, Murray, as like the greatest time of my life.
Oh, okay. We also did Karen Rontowski's show. I don't know if you guys have done it. Benefit for the Women's Shelter. Have you ever done it, Hugh?
No, I've heard.
Do you know Karen?
I do.
Rontowski?
Isn't Karen the one who used to work in Las Vegas? Before she did stand-up.
Oh, that
she
I don't know.
She lived there and worked at the Riviera Hotel where the Improv was.
Okay.
And I knew her as a aspiring stand-up.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
Years ago.
Okay, that might be. I don't know anything before stand-up with her.
Mm-hmm.
But she does that women's shelter show out in like Palmdale or Pomona
Silmar
or something.
Silmar or something like that.
And it's fantastic. And I was supposed to do it this Saturday, but I can't do it. But it's just, it looks like the setup should be, it looks like it's going to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a jacuzzi on stage when I did it.
I remember having fun there.
Yeah. There's like a fence and a pool between the audience. So you got audience one and then the audience way in the back. So you look like it's just set up to be a disaster, but it's fantastic.
That's fantastic. By the way, going back to Dennis not remembering the three times he met you, mm-hmm. The good thing is, if you haven't been clocked by him with his fist,
oh,
then you know he likes you.
Oh, all right.
Because his thing is, Dennis will tell you, he likes to punch people. And he does. He punches people. I wouldn't say at random, but often you punch people.
Have you ever seen me punch anybody?
No, because I'm scared.
You're about to.
I tend to shy away from Dennis unless he says, I want you to be.
No, because we were casting somebody for the show we just talked about. And there was somebody that they casted. I said, this guy's supposed to look mean. I would punch this guy. So that's where he's getting at. I don't have a violent streak anymore. No.
Are you big golfers? You brought up Sam Snead.
It's the one sport I don't know anything about, nor am I golf. But he golfs.
I've stunk at it for 40 years.
Isn't that the thing, though? Like, I read something like only 3%, including professionals, shoot scratch or under.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. We had my buddy belongs to the Lakeside Country Club over here in Toluca Lake.
Okay.
And this is my favorite story about that. That country club was started by actors because they weren't allowed in the old Los Angeles. So they were banned from going to the Los Angeles Country Club. So the actors started their own country club, and the first thing they did was ban women and Jews.
The actors did that?
Yes.
What year was this?
Oh, 40-something around
there.
That's
hilarious.
Something like that.
Now I do want to punch somebody.
They couldn't ban agents, though.
No,
that policy.
Yeah. Well, I think the agents played in the other one.
Oh, they did.
And then, yeah. Oh. So my buddy belongs there, and he's open invitation the whole time. And I saved it for when my dad was in town, because my dad's a big golfer. And I went out there, and I was embarrassed about, first of all, these people pay $200,000 a year just to be able to play this course, let alone, you know, whatever they pay on the side. So these people play.
Oh, so it's a nice course.
All the time. Yeah, these people play all the time. And I get out there, and I thought I played bad, but I was embarrassed. Like, I apologized to the guy every hole. I'm like, I'm sorry, man. My dad's having a good time. Can you just focus on that? I'll pick up my ball. I'll drive the cart. I don't even, you know, it was so bad. But then I ran into Dreesen. Dreesen belongs on that. On that course.
He belongs on it, or he belongs to the...
Both. The guy's a great golfer. They blew through our foursome, him and three other guys. It was like him, Sinatra's manager.
Well, they were going to wait and sit and watch you play and apologize after every shot. We're going to sit for that.
I'm telling you, this is over Christmas, and I still haven't talked to the guy. I'm so embarrassed the way I played.
Have you guys performed at golf clubs?
Yeah, and some of my worst gigs.
I have some bad memories of that.
One of them was a couple years ago, and it was just a bad setup at a country club around here. Everything, you know, it's like you have the perfect storm for which doesn't suit you. I don't like audiences that are all men or all women, but particularly all men. And after they played golf, and this was like half. Members and half guests. So they had a weird dynamic. They don't even all know each other. And they got a lousy intro, and they didn't want to listen anyway. They were having fun after the tournament. They were having, I was supposed to do like 30, and after 15 or 20,
it during the day?
It was before night came.
Well, that's also a problem.
You know what I mean? What I mean. Perfect storm. Perfect outside. Storm. Outside.
Yeah. Light. Probably light shining through the windows.
I was outside.
Oh, you were outdoors.
Outside. Oh, wind blowing around. But I remember looking over at the guy that was paying me, and he had hired me for another gig, which I'd done great at. So at least that was there, you know.
You sure.
And I looked at him, and I just went, you know, with the hands on, I go, I'm getting off. You know, it's not even worth whatever you're paying. And he said, I get off because this isn't any good for anybody. I'm just going by the look on his face. He didn't say that, but. But I remember I was driving home, and I blew it off. You know how you used to have a bad gig and it would stay with you? I blew it off before I got home, which I was proud of myself.
Good.
Because I'm like, man, what the hell?
Yeah. It wasn't your fault. I once did a San Diego resort golf club, and the audience was the San Diego Chargers. It was a private party for them. And they had a quarterback, Dan Fouts.
Yeah.
And he sat front and center because quarterbacks are the big shots on the team. And what I realized 5 minutes into my act was – if Fouts didn't laugh, his players wouldn't laugh.
They all
kiss up.
He's like the CEO of the corporation.
And he's one of these guys who literally sat there with a cigar, arms
Mr.
folded.
Judgmental. Mr. Judgmental.
So I realized the only way I'm going to – it's sink or swim. So I basically called him out and said, oh, I see that you all kiss up to him and, you know, did it that way. And then he busted up laughing.
Oh, nice.
At least I had the guts to take him on.
Nice.
And then the rest went okay. But it was death up until that moment.
So and, then, was, and you did that when 2 minutes before you had to get off, right?
5 minutes.
you didn't think of it until
55 minutes into the hour.
I was scared because he's a big guy. They're all big. They look scary.
Yeah, it's the NFL.
Exactly. They look like dangerous.
I did one where I know. Aaron, tell the guys how much I know about sports.
That would be nothing.
Zero. Oh, see, you tricked me, Murray, because when you said that to me about golf, I thought, oh, Murray's a big sports guy. You're not at all.
No, nothing to do with a ball at all.
But you know what football is.
Yes, I'm aware. My dad made me play it in like fifth grade, and it was the Murray Valeriano embarrassment hour every Saturday, which I'm passing along to my kid. but I did one, me and a guy named Mike Pace. Do you guys know Mike Pace?
Mike. Okay. Michael Pace.
Michael Pace. He was headlining, and I was opening.
You know him as Michael? Because I know him as Mike. Maybe he and I are
back
tighter.
Back in the day, he was...
Back in the day, it was
stage
Michael?
Stage name was Michael Pace.
And it was one of those where it was all NFL players. It was San Diego. It was outside San Diego. And it was all NFL players were the draw to come have dinner. And I didn't know any of them. I didn't recognize any of them.
Yeah.
And like Mike would be like, come here, get a picture with so-and-so. And I'm like... Who was that? The CEO of the? Does he work here? And I'm like, no, that's so and so. He had the most place kicks for, like
the most place kicks. Nobody puts it that way.
Place kicks,
yeah, the most. I'm pretty sure the guy had the most.
That's awesome.
All right, if you don't know what, okay. So I went up, and I was just nobody. I won't go into the story because I told the story a thousand times. But it was one of those where it was a benefit for doctors who volunteered their time to fix. Children with cleft palates and birth
defects.
So
they showed pictures before the...
Had the girl come on before me and tell her story to where everybody cried. And then before she even walked out through the hugs, they're like, your first comedian's Murray Valeriano.
That's what they call it, a mean curveball.
That's terrible.
A mean curveball right before
That's
you get it.
Awful.
It was awful. And the only person I recognized was Christopher Knight. And you
Brady
might know
Bunch.
Him as Peter Brady.
Peter Brady.
Out of all the, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so starstruck. And I kept telling him, don't drag Christopher Knight down into your hell. Don't drag him down with you. Because you could just see him just like, I hope he doesn't recognize me. Just sinking in his seat, I hope he doesn't recognize me.
You don't have to know anything about sports to appreciate this gig I had, both of you. The Lakers hired me and another comedian.
Now, I do follow baseball.
You follow baseball? Oh, you didn't tell me that. We got to do stand-up at, I guess it was a tennis match between Michael Chang and another player. Michael Chang was one of the world's best players. So it was held at where the Lakers used to play the Forum.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a sports stadium. And we go on and being paid very well. I'm supposed to do 15 minutes. Well, I realize right into my act that the reverberation is so loud in a stadium.
Yeah.
Like everything you say, hey.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just gobbledygook because you never hear someone talk straight through.
Right.
So imagine how they couldn't hear a word I was saying.
Right.
So I did what you did on that TV show. I just said, I'm going to pretend like I'm killing because they can't hear me and I'm being paid well. And so
what were you getting, $200?
I'm going to say like... I'm going to say over 1,000. It was good money.
Yeah.
Wow, over 1,000 for 15?
Right. So I walked up stage and Jeannie Buss, Jerry Buss's daughter, you know who owns the Lakers, she was just like so apologetic. She knew that there was nothing you could do. But it was just that's not even bombing.
Right.
Because I would say bombing
that's
is if they can hear you.
That's the way I feel. If they listen and they try and they hate you,
if they reject your material.
Yeah.
But that wasn't a bomb. That was just a poor booking.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have had comedy.
I had something in Vegas one time at one of these fancy, fancy hotels that's outside of Vegas. You know, it's like $400 to play golf or something like that. Right? That kind of place. And the gig was going to be at 8 p.m., corporate gig, and down by the pool. They had their own little section of it. And I remember I get there, and they had music playing throughout the pool. You know how the music has it's always. And I go, I get there a few hours early to any gig I can to try to put whatever fires out that need to be fired and figure out at least
smart.
This thing's got to be moved up or whatever. And so they bring me up to meet the lady who was the big corporate lady, the queen of this company. And I said, can we get the music turned off? You know, and she says, no, I don't know how to do that. And I said, well, then it's going to suck. You know, the show's going to suck. But no one talked to her, you know, with this crowd, no one talked to her like that. But anyway, they got the music off. But the gig itself, there was literally a swimming pool between the stage and where the audience was going to sit. A small swimming pool, but a swimming pool. And I go to the stage and I hit the stage and I'm doing it. And I'm too far away from the audience.
Sure.
So it's a wireless mic. So I say, I'm going to take this and take it over and where the people are. So I walk all the way to the length of the pool and I walk to the people. And I start doing my act. And it's going much better now. It's a little bit more intimate, going a little bit better. But the sound, the speakers were back where I was standing on the stage. So I'm saying something, and I don't know if it's a half a second or a second later, the sound is coming.
Right.
And it was just as weird as you can get. But I was getting something. I was going somewhere, so I'm going to just leave well enough alone and deal with it this way. But
yeah.
You ever play those celebrity golf games?
No, I don't like to do those.
No.
Do you mean do stand up?
Well, no. You know, you go, you get put up with a foursome of people who are paid, and then you do a show afterwards.
Then they'd be upset because I suck at golf and I'm not famous. Oh, no. You know, they'd be, right. It's a double whammy.
I did.
Who's this guy that's digging up a hole?
That's what I think. Kira Saltanovich hooked me up with. It was like a benefit for the Police Athletic League, and we were all there, and they're like, "So who's our celebrity?"
Yeah,
it's me.
It's this guy.
Nice. I'm right with me. Wait till you see me play golf. You think you're disappointed? but there's one that goes. There's Bill Engvall has one every year, which is supposed to be really good. I only wrote for him for 7 years, never invited me to do it, so screw that guy.
Well, you don't talk about
he's tight with the California Angels.
I know. Oh, he's yeah, he has.
Yes, is he a big Angels fan?
He does have Angels. Well, he doesn't live here anymore, so he moved out to, I don't know, say where he moved to, but he moved out of state.
Did
so.
You write for the sitcom?
I wrote for everything. He at one point, Bill had 5 shows on television, and I wrote for 4 of them, and not the sitcom. The other ones stayed on for longer than the season, so I'm not going to pat myself on the back.
What was the format of the other shows? Like video clips?
Yeah, it was the clip. It was actually the show that launched all the clip shows. Like, right. They came to us when Tosh.0 started, and because before clip shows, there were... This is History of Television with Murray Valeriano. Before clip shows, like...
What's your name again?
We've met 4 times now.
4 times,
Dennis. Including this one. This is 4 times.
Is this the 4th?
Yeah. It was like America's Funniest Home Videos, but nobody knew to go to the internet to find stuff. And we kind of figured out, oh, we go to the internet, we can do that. And then that's what kind of started the whole. And then I jumped around for 6 years writing pilots based on YouTube for pilot to series to series. It was fantastic.
Wow.
And now that all dried up and I do a podcast in the Valley.
And I love what you've done with the place.
Oh, thank you.
The
very
golden
much.
Chandelier. And
absolutely. Eventually, we'll figure out how to work the cameras so you won't be disappointed.
No, I'm glad.
Hugh brought Al Lubell on. Do you know Al?
I do.
I've seen Al Lubell. I haven't seen you since the pilot, but I've seen Al Lubell 100 times.
You have?
Yeah, just running into him on the road. And last time I saw him, he was up at, you guys ever do the Throckmorton?
Heard
up in
it.
San Francisco,
no.
Mill Valley?
No.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's fantastic.
But if it's fantastic, I haven't done it.
It is one of those gigs where you're like, this is what I thought it would be like. You know,
is it a club?
It's a theater.
It's a theater.
It's a theater in Mill Valley, and Mark Pitta used to book it.
Oh, I might have done that.
And that's where Robin used to hang out, and Dana lives.
Okay.
Used to live around the corner also, but he lives down here now. So they used to show up every Tuesday, and that's what would put it on. That's what really put it on the map. And so now they treat you right, and it's great. I highly recommend you do it.
But I introduced you to Al, right?
You did. Yes, you introduced me to Al, and I'd known Al because he's just
of course
he's been.
And then what I remember, Dennis, he did such a great job, Murray, dealing with Al, because Al treated this show like a therapy session. And yet, I was a guest. I think there was another
Which
guest.
Show are you talking about?
The show,
one he
right?
was hosting.
We're talking right.
Oh, okay. Yeah, his show. So we're supposed to talk about comedy, and Murray would direct us. But to Al, you give him somebody listening to him one-on-one,
yeah.
Suddenly it's a therapy session.
Which he needs.
He needs. Yeah. But so I had to keep, during the interview, go, Al, you know,
right.
You're not paying for a session.
Right.
We're guests on a show. I don't know if you're aware of that. And remember, Al would just go, oh, that's true. Yeah, and he'd laugh. Right.
It wasn't Al. He's one of the funniest guys to watch.
Oh,
work
absolutely.
In a small room, you know, and I used to watch him at the Cellar and just, you know, there's other guys who are great and what, but you don't always want to watch him. And Al, you could watch every night because the audience, the way they would react to him was
sure
terrific.
I remember seeing him one of the first times I saw him live after I met him was we were both at the improv, and he went up first and he did a bit, and I'm not going to butcher his bit, but he did a bit about his name up front that went for 2 minutes,
yeah.
3 minutes yeah. to silence, just absolute silence. And I'm thinking, has this guy lost his? Since the last, he lost his mind.
I'm remembering it now. It's like I'm Alu Bell.
Yeah.
Lulu Bell.
But then his tag on it just destroyed the place.
Was it the song?
No. It was like he's like I'm Alu Bell, blah, 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 yeah. You know, for 3 minutes. You know, it seems like an eternity.
Right.
And then he goes, I know, you're all just sitting there like, who is this guy? And the place just. Boom. Just God, uh-huh. Man. It was one of those bits I went home and I woke my wife up and told her about it. yeah, he's great. So I've seen him a bunch lately. Wait, you mentioned the Cellar. Where'd you get started?
I started in Miami, Florida.
This is Dennis,
Florida.
Not you.
Dennis Regan. I started in Miami, Florida, but I moved to New York about a year and a half later. And
quickly into it, huh?
Yeah, Brian was leaving. I wasn't planning to move to New York, but Brian was leaving an apartment up there. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, I'm going to go up there. And he said, you could have my little place. It wasn't an apartment. It was a room in a house in Queens. And he said, you could rent this for a month or something like that. And, you know, at the end of his contract or whatever. And I said, yeah, I'll do that. And then I started thinking about it for about a week. And I go, no, I'm making the move, you know. It's never that easy to move to New York
right.
and have a place. So I made the move up there and whenever that was.
What year was that, roughly?
90.
90?
Yeah, something like 90.
So you're still on the – you've got the tail of the boom also, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I started during the real boom.
Right, you started during the boom.
So you were booking – tours out of or road out of Miami.
I really started in the boom. I was headlining like one nighters within like a year and a half, and that's not to brag. That's mm-hmm. just to kind of show you the kind of boom it was. I remember one time I was gonna be middling for, say there's the term again, middling.
We prefer
for Elaine Boozler or Carol Leifer or something at the Comedy Cellar. No, the Comedy Corner. In West Palm Beach, but I'd never done more than 10 minutes. So I was going to have to do 20 or 25 at this gig. So I got this gig at this place called Shotzi's. It was a restaurant. It was going to be Wednesday through Thursday night. And I go, I'm going to challenge myself. I'd only been doing comedy about 11 months. And I got to figure out if I can do 20. I thought maybe I had that much stuff, but I'd never done. So I get there and the headliner guy comes up to me and I just met him and he said, would you mind switching? Would you mind let me middle and you headline? And I go, look, buddy, I've only been doing comedy. I've never even middled before.
Right.
I'm not going to headline. I said, I've only been doing comedy for 11 months. And he said, I've only been doing it 6 months.
Wow.
And he had, but he was kind of a hack. You know, he did the arms behind the back and that kind of stuff. But
sure.
he did the job, but that was kind of how the boom was going. Everybody that had a restaurant would have a Wednesday night and they'd set up a microphone over in the corner and say,
that's okay. Refreshing, actually, to hear.
Right.
So there was a club in Arizona,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to say outside Phoenix, maybe. And the owner was notorious for being sort of scummy. But I was booked as the headliner. And there was a middle act who was filthy and did song parodies.
Oh, yeah.
I even to this day like remember some of the bits he did. And
I thought we weren't supposed to shit on another.
No, we're not saying his name.
I know.
So
I'm just kidding.
I had a very
Only
hard,
I break the rules.
Break the
apparently.
I couldn't follow him. I mean,
right.
Like I would come on to the first night. I come on. And kind of die because the crowd loves him.
Uh-huh.
So the owner, that scummy owner, calls me in his office and goes, so I'm thinking the rest of the week we'll switch.
Uh-huh.
But I was already a legitimate headliner and I go, no.
Yeah.
No,
really?
You hired me to headline. And I, in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm going to bomb every night. Right. Like, this is a pride thing.
Sure.
Like, it doesn't sound right to me that I should just cave.
Right.
So I insisted.
On bombing.
And I bombed every night. The question was just, how badly did I bomb?
Right.
Like, because there were points where I go like, yeah, I couldn't bomb worse than tonight. No, I could.
No, we still have Saturday Second Show.
He just remained filthy and doing the stuff. But I do look back at that and going, well, that was tough. I showed some pride to not back down. I mean, I don't know what would have happened. I guess he could have said, well, you're fired. You know,
right.
But he didn't.
I like it. You paid me to bomb every night, and I will bomb.
You knew my act when you hired me.
Sure.
Why would you choose that act to go before me? I have no idea.
I learned that lesson early, and not through my own experience, but I was when I started out, Margaret Smith was headlining the show. I don't know if you guys know Margaret Smith. And very low-key,
very
one-linery, very kind of bright. Actually reminds me of Tig now that I think about it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense to you, Aaron? Aaron's checked out an hour ago.
He doesn't know.
But somebody put like a
high
just
energy.
High energy, you know, Ron Pearson, Darren Carter type person in front of her.
Right.
And she was pissed. And she was like, why would you?
Well, yeah, people are clueless. Even sometimes people that run clubs and stuff, they were clueless about that back then, at least. I remember I have a kind of a reverse story of similar years, but I was living in New York, and I went down to do a club in North Carolina somewhere. It was my first time headlining, but it was co-headlining, which I hated the idea of anyway, not out of ego, just out of logistics, you know, because they'd flip you one night and the other night and that kind of thing. It was just – so we get down there, and it's me and Greg Rogel. You know Greg Rogel, very funny
New York guy, right?
Yeah. And we get down there, and they say, you know, you show up on a Wednesday in the afternoon, and they go – and it's actually a triple headliner thing. And you're like, what? Yeah, there's three of you guys, and everybody's going to do a half hour. They had some local guy who was, they said he was very strong and popular, and he was going to do, and I said, so how's this going to work? And they said, everybody's going to do a half hour, and I was going to close. They give it to me to close, and I'm like, oh, man. So I don't want to be a complainer. It's my first time through, and I'm figuring things out. But I go, so to the manager, before I go up there, I go, what are the checks? When are you going to drop the checks? You know, because the check drop, it's a headliner. Usually you've got 15 minutes as a headliner before they drop the checks. And he just, you know, goes, oh, I guess about 5 minutes after you get up there. And I'm like, yeah. So I go up there on Wednesday night, and Greg Rogel kills in the middle. The other guy does whatever he does. And then Greg Rogel does real well in the middle. And then I go up, and I have a real hard time. I don't get the crowd before the checks, and I never get them afterwards, right? So I'm thinking, this is going to be a long week. And I go in there on Thursday night, and before the show, the manager comes up to me, and he says, you know what, we're going to flip you and Greg tonight. And I said, oh, good. And he goes, I thought you'd be upset. And I go, no, I'm not upset. I go, this is my first time through here. I want to have some good shows. I'm not going to have any good shows in that slot the way you've got it set up. And he says, what do you mean? What are you talking about? And I explained to him the situation.
Right.
The checks, you can't have drop checks 5 minutes after a headliner gets up there. So he has this kind of stunned look on his face, and he walks away. And then so the show goes, and the opener goes up and does whatever he does. And I go up, and I do real well. I do real well, right? And then I come off, and I don't very – and then Greg's being going up. And I don't very often root for the headliner to bomb. But I wanted Greg to bomb this time, you know? And he did. He didn't disappoint me. He had a hard time because it's impossible.
Right.
And he had a real hard time. And then afterwards, the manager came up to me and said, yeah, I see we got a problem, and we'll make an adjustment. And they made some sort of adjustment on the clock. But I told Greg a story recently on and chat on Facebook or something. I'd never told him this. I was rooting for you to bomb.
That's awesome.
And those listeners who don't know, the check drop is when the waitresses – put the checks down for the drinks and the food, and the audience realizes they just paid $9 for a Corona.
Well, I should have probably told that before I told the story.
Oh, that's all right. That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
That's why I'm here. And so it's hard.
So retroactively go back and put that at the beginning of the story. Can you actually do that? Can you edit this?
And I can edit it and then.
But it's more entertaining, I think, to hear it in real time, to what happened.
But then I'd have to edit this
part.
I'm
just kidding.
And this part would be edited also.
Okay. Can you edit out you?
What? I am impressed that you remembered Greg Rogel as opposed to remembering Murray.
Oh. Greg Rogel is memorable.
Hey.
One day I hope you'll respect me enough to wish that I bomb.
I do right now.
How are we doing on time? I know Hugh's got a thing.
We're at 44.
Okay, awesome. We got 15, 20 minutes.
Speaking of bombing, I don't want to talk to you anymore, but speaking of bombing, you know how like sometimes...
Wait, you don't want to talk to you or you want to talk to Hugh?
Hugh. Okay. Hugh, whatever his name is. When you do have a bad set, a rough set, and when you get interviewed and you talk about them, and some people say, oh, and then you remember it until you have a good set. And I say, no. You remember it until you have another bad set. Then that set replaces that corner of your brain, you know. So you never really forget them. You know, a good set doesn't make a bad set go away. It's the other bad set that replaces it in your brain, you know.
That's very true.
What's the biggest crowd you ever performed in front of?
Excuse me. Good question. So, well, that referring back to that performance I did at the LA Forum.
Seems like he only did one gig in his life.
No, that's not true. But come on, guys, that's a professional sports venue. That had to have been 12,000 people.
Oh, sure, of course.
They didn't hear a word I said.
Right, right. Well, that kills my next question.
Oh, yeah. But in terms of
How did you do?
But in terms of like good...
As long as I'm going back and editing.
I mean, Carnegie Hall is big. That was a great crowd. Why are you looking at him?
Well, Carnegie Hall? Like, why? I would open every conversation with I performed at Carnegie Hall.
It's a humble brag, but right. I got to open for Jon Stewart.
There is nothing humble about it.
Okay. That was and for me, keep in mind, I'm a classical violinist. I sometimes use it in my stand up. I brought it out, of course, for that show.
Right. Yeah.
That was a fantasy come true.
Sure, absolutely.
To get to play my violin in Carnegie Hall. And, of course, the crowd was amazing.
Right.
But that's a big venue.
That is huge.
So that's the one that I probably am most remember in a good way.
Who is the old violin comic from?
Henny Youngman?
No, from the 50s.
Jack Benny?
Jack Benny.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
Did you ever see his opening bit at Carnegie Hall where he walks out, he's got his violin, and he walks out and he's... it's all visual, so I'm glad I'm doing this on a podcast.
Uh-huh. You'll learn.
Well, I'm going to bomb now. You get your wish list. This is great. But he walks out. He's got the violin where everybody can see it, and he's bathing in the applause and everything. And he puts his violin up to his chin, and he pulls his hand out, and he doesn't have the bow. And again, it's like another 5-minute setup to where it just brought. It was fantastic.
He's amazing.
Carnegie Hall is a structural phenomenon, if I'm not mistaken.
Meaning. You don't understand why the acoustics are good, or
you don't understand many sentences.
I may not be using phenomenon.
I don't
right.
know what.
Hey, can I tell my Carnegie Hall thing? I got to perform at Carnegie.
You
Hall.
Did,
yeah, but not as a headliner. Ray Romano asked me to open there for him during some one of those festivals or something like that, right? And I said yes, and it's a long time ago, 15 or 20 years ago. It was when his show had just started and he was getting big. And I was supposed to do 20 or something minutes. And I had a real strong set. Let me just say that. I had a real strong set at Carnegie Hall, which was nice. And the Letterman people were the people that produced his show, Ray's show.
Worldwide Chance.
They were there. And then later up in the green room, dressing room, I guess they would call it. I was standing next to a grand piano, you know, you don't usually get those, but I was standing next to a grand piano and I was hanging out there. And the Letterman people came up to me and said they enjoyed the show and they wanted me to do Letterman. One of the reasons I like to bring it up is because whenever comedians ask me, how did you get Letterman? I go, this is how you do it. You get yourself a gig at Carnegie Hall and you crush in front of the Letterman people.
That's fantastic.
That's awesome.
Who was booking Letterman then?
What's her name?
Zoe.
Zoe.
Is that before Eddie?
Before Eddie, yeah.
Did it go Zoe, Eddie?
I believe so.
All right. What do you feel the difference is between for a TV set and a regular club set? Do you feel like you have to adjust yourself, your delivery, your stage presence?
I do.
Because I felt I never did Letterman, but I've done other stuff, but everybody told me Dave set it up perfectly. It was almost like a perfect... Karen Rontosky actually told me that. It was like set up perfectly for stand-up. Do you feel like you have to adjust?
I mean, I think so. I think that a TV audience is... There's a heightened sense of reality because they know they're there for something special. Mm-hmm. It's not just a club night. And so they want you to succeed.
Okay.
That's number one. Is
sure.
There's not a thing of
not as good. Much as you want to succeed.
That's true. That is true. But in terms of, like, for me, the Letterman show was not the easiest.
Oh, really?
It was the one maybe that I'm most proud of.
Okay.
But other shows I felt the crowd was maybe just more, like, ready mm-hmm. to laugh.
Why do you think the Letterman was so difficult for you and that you
it's
bombed?
It's funny you
why
say
do you
that.
Think you bombed?
Why do you think I bombed? I would say that Dave himself, being the genius he is, it's not that he's not like a cheerleader.
Mm, yeah.
Like when it was time for the stand-up, band plays, they come back, okay, Paul. He seemed to be pretty much just, okay, let's right. bring out the stand-up. Whereas other shows, I've seen hosts be more effusive maybe mm-hmm. about who's coming on next.
He was very effusive when he introduced me. What was I going to say? What about doing those shows?
Mm-hmm.
They're not a blast, you know what I mean? It's kind of cool to be going there and you feel like you're in the game and you're glad when it's over. But it's not nearly as much fun as just going up in a small room when it's because the pressure is real. If you go up in a small room on a Friday night and the people are there and they're a good crowd and you screw up a joke, you go, okay, I got another one here. There's a lot of importance that you don't screw up your first joke. You don't forget what your second joke is. And so you just kind of get in this you just kind of do the first joke. What's the second joke? What's the third joke? And you want to sell it. You want to mm-hmm. do a good job. But it's not a blast. And I call preparing for them like just a festival of second guessing because you're always thinking, well, this is not a good opening joke, and I always need this joke is always gone with that one, and this one I got to save for the end. And no, they don't. Crowds don't like this joke unless they like me already, and I can't do it too early. All these things, and you're used to doing 35, 40, 45 minutes, and then you go, it went 4.5 minutes.
Yeah,
and you're like, man, it's tricky.
Yeah, I get you.
That's all true.
I agree 100%. All right, we got to get out of here. We got to roll out. This was a blast. Thank you so much for coming.
We both hope we lived up to your expectations, Murray.
Well,
I don't think you had such great expectations.
Keeping it kind of low. For Hugh, I did.
Is that your name, Murray?
Yeah. Fourth time. Fourth time we met.
That's so sad.
All right.
It's nice to meet you again. And thanks for having us on. It was fun.
No, it was great. I love the fact that you have no idea who I am, yet I have your number and I texted you.
I don't know how that happened.
And it was great, and I'm so glad you suggested Hugh, because that's fantastic. I haven't seen Hugh in such a good time. What have you been
on? I know Hugh hasn't done a gig since the Hollywood Bowl.
Exactly. producing television.
Writing for you. Awesome. Are you doing any stand-up
anymore? Yeah, I am, but I was sort of raising kids took me out of it a bit.
Sure.
But now they're old enough that I can hit the clubs.
Yeah, I don't even think I had my kid last time you were here.
You did.
I did?
It was a baby.
Oh.
Like, how old's your kid?
So he's six now, so it was 6 years
ago. No, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's a boy, right?
It's still a boy.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a way he could go, no, it's a girl. And I'd go, oh, I stand corrected.
We have these neighbors, and their family is visiting from Pakistan, and the babysitter doesn't speak English very well, and I didn't know that. And we have a wooden fence around our house. And I walked out the other morning, and she had the baby on the fence. It was bouncing the baby on the fence.
On the fence.
Just holding on to it, being very careful or whatever.
Remember one of the spiky things that goes up?
Yeah, one of those kids graveyard. One of those graveyard fences.
They love to be bounced on that.
And I walk by joking, and they go, hey, if he falls over in my yard, I get to keep him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And and she's like, what? I don't. So
that's,
I run.
That's the rules here.
I run into the family yesterday. It was like, oh, I think I freaked out your brother's babysitter because the family's visiting the family because she doesn't speak that English that well. And he said, what he said? Well, I saw him bouncing the baby on there. And I said, hey, when he falls over, I get to keep him, right?
Uh-huh.
And the visiting dad, who barely speaks English, goes, he's a girl. And I'm like, what? He's a girl. He's not a boy. So now he's pissed off at me because I don't.
You said him.
I pissed off this whole. And these, by the way, these people moved in 6 months ago. So now I have an enemy for life.
Nice. You're the big hit of the neighborhood.
Yeah, people love Mr. Guy who thinks he's funny. People loves that guy. All right. You guys are fantastic. Where can we find you? What's going on?
How about
Let's look for the show you guys are working on.
No, forget that.
Okay.
My web series, can I plug that? My
Absolutely.
Web series is called That Darn Dennis. It's on a little thing called YouTube, mm-hmm. which is getting some traction. YouTube is getting some traction.
It's a great show. Thing.
That Darn Dennis? Is
That Darn Dennis.
Okay.
And That Darn Dennis is very entertaining.
Excellent.
I have a hopefully a series coming on MeTV.
Which I love MeTV.
So I just did a pilot for them
called awesome.
Hugh Fink's Real L.A.
Okay.
Where it's about thriving and surviving Los Angeles with real people who sure. live and work here. They could be in show business or not. So the pilot is Bob Saget, but
that's awesome. The other All right, episodes. Let me ask you, how does that fit within MeTV's retro brand?
They
We're
kind of
like talking like a fucking
because
suit right now.
That was great. You're good. They need some local programming just for the L.A. market.
Oh,
so to answer your question, it's not – the retro part will be the guests.
Okay.
Like Bob.
Oh, cool.
But it's really – there's a – I think an FCC rule that you have to have some informative programming locally.
Right.
So this will be about Los Angeles for viewers here to learn a little about, you know.
Oh, awesome.
Best way to live in Los Angeles.
Okay.
In a funny way.
All right. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Excellent. MeTV is fantastic.
What's the name of it?
Hugh Fink's Real L.A.
Great. Great.
All right. And then look for Dennis Regan's Real Dennis, right? Is that what I
got? That Darn Dennis.
I wouldn't steal a name from
that
you.
That Darn Dennis.
By the way, MeTV follows me on Twitter. Huh. I'm not going to brag.
Well, you'll be a good guest.
Oh, well, thank you.
As will Dennis, but I won't have you on together.
We don't get along well. That would be bad. That's obviously. This was a mistake.
I was looking forward to it.
You could meet me for a fifth time and not have no idea who the fuck I am.
You're making me sound
By the way, when I host my show, each guest, we each split up the hour. So you do 20 minutes, you do 20.
So we don't have to see each other?
It's like triple headliner.
All right. Any dates coming up you want to plug or Dennis?
No.
All right. Awesome. Great. Oh, yeah. You're off the road for a while, you told me.
Till August.
Yeah, good for you. All right. I am at Murray V on Twitter, Murray V Comedy on Instagram. I am booking, I'm rebooking my dates. I had to cancel all my summer and spring dates. So I'm rebooking those and I'll be back at Irvine Improv, La Jolla Comedy Store coming up, some casinos in New Mexico. Check it all out at Facebook. And that's it. Hey, come see these guys when they come to your town. They're very funny. Thank you guys. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for having us, Murray.
Thank you.
You want to know about life on the road? It's
booze, tacos, angry dwarfs, strippers waving guns,
and
fees, fights, candle flights, running with the runs,
and
blacklists, bounce checks, great, a bachelorette, drunks in the front, making out through your set,
and
middle acts doing blow, more missing merch,
and
drive the rental car past another mega church,
and
juice, keys, vagina, fist, your cell phone is gone, one big Law and Order marathon.